everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you, with The Positive Mind. Tuesday through Thursday here at WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing new ideas, concepts, guests, things to think about. Things to think about. So we've been talking for the last few weeks, we've been talking about just a different perspective of men. And I focused on men, and I keep saying, okay, we're going to talk about men and keep talking about men. Then we're going to shift our talk to women and talk about women. But something's happened. As a result of our talking about men, we've gotten so much response from men who are saying that they have never heard the words come from inside their heart, that they are so glad that we are doing this. And from women who are saying they're so glad we're doing this as well. So it seems that talking about men and maleness seems to be important. Important. Not like on the man show important, but important. Important, not like guys sitting around, chatting with each other about the Jets or the Mets or the whatever else. It's more about being real. Hey, women. Aren't you sick and tired of hearing men complain? You date a man, you meet him for the first time, he's all strong, he's in control of his life, he's all powerful, I am good, I give to the world, I'm the kind of guy who, I'm spending my life doing good things for the world, I don't have a steady job because most of my work is done in philanthropy, but I'm in control. And then a little later you get to know that this is really a little boy with his insecurities, and they appear, and he's unsure, and he's worried, and he's frantic, and he's depressed. Yep, the more you get to know a man, the more you see his needs. And the man seems to need something. Something that's almost invisible. So he turns towards you and he says, but what I need is, I need from you the right kind of love, the right kind of sex, the right kind of attitude, and I will feel strong. And you are the woman who is supposed to give him this strength. Not to leave out homosexual relationships. He could also be the man who is meant to give him this strength. He thinks he needs a good time. He thinks he needs pleasure, achievement, recognition, success, power. What he really needs is self-confidence. But how could you have self-confidence? Because your very idea of what being a man is burning out. It's not working. Today I want to bring you a show about this concept of men, men's expectations, and male burnout, because I think you're going to enjoy this. I mean, here we are, trying to just sort it out. Are you tired, guys? I'm hoping that the men listening get a chance to form a circle, and hold their arms around each other and just, link arms and sit around a fire and bow their heads and talk as true warriors who are tired, who don't know what kind of battle they're in. Is it different for men to feel burnout than women? I think in many ways it is. Seems interesting. Chronic fatigue syndrome seems to appear much more with women than with men. Men aren't allowed to have chronic fatigue. I believe that burnout is not the end of the candle. It is not the candle burning out, where the wick finally, after having exhausted all of the life of that beautiful candle, flickers. I don't think that's what burnout is. I think it's not the end of the energetic pot. I think burnout is the spotlight burning out. The one that was pointed at the ideals that kept us going, like achievement, success, power. I take from the work of Christos, who said that most men today are burnt out and don't know it. Whether a success or a failure, most men suffer from some of the symptoms of burnout: depression, anxiety, lack of motivation, chronic physical ailments, fatigue from overwork, addiction to alcohol, compulsive sexual activity, regular bouts of anger at home or at work. These symptoms are not acknowledged because we men have been taught to numb ourselves to any feelings that get in the way. We're good at goals, we're good at objectives, we're good at job descriptions. In fact, men need a mission. We've been taught to be warriors. Over the span of thousands of years, we've been bred and trained to be focused, intrepid, vigilant, goal-directed. And as we fulfill our mission statements, and the ones of our companies, our organizations, our communities, we're also following a deeper programming. We fulfill the job description of manhood that rewards success no matter the physical or emotional cost. Just as warriors for millennia have ignored their own well-being for a higher purpose, we are taught that the goal of these missions is the higher purpose of our beleaguered family and society. It's the real sense society rewards men as warriors, and men are on a war footing emotionally most of their lives. You are supposed to provide, guys. You're supposed to succeed. You're supposed to achieve. You are now going to move all of mankind, womankind, the planet, people, society forward. It's your job. Interesting, isn't it? The truth is we've been betrayed. Our bosses, our generals, our political and spiritual leaders have unknowingly betrayed us. The modern way of achieving manhood in our society is not working for us. We've been using a training manual for manhood that is flawed and it's out of date. We've been intrepid in fulfilling our job description only to find out that there's been a mistake. Our training has been inappropriate and the mission ill-conceived. Men are burnt out by the mission. Burnout is a modern battle fatigue, and we're suffering a pain that our mission won't allow us to admit, because the battle is an illusion. Now, many of you who have not been able to succeed are sitting there saying, aha, finally somebody's saying it. I feel wiped out because I've never even entered the fray. Many of you decided not even to jump in, to be part of the fight. And many others of you have been part of a fight for so long, you're tired. Because what's it all about, Alfie? What is it when midlife crisis comes around? What is it when the male menopause hits and you suddenly look and say, well, right, what was that all about? Yep, I got a car. Yep, I got a mortgage on a house, a wife, and I've got kids. And I guess I'm ready to die. I guess it's time to go. I guess I've fulfilled my role because it feels empty. So here's what I want, men. I want you to feel some sympathy for yourself. You've been betrayed. Women, yes, I want you to feel sympathy for the men, too. Funny thing about women, you know what I mean? I mean, the woman's movement fought for equal rights. Equal rights to do just about anything a man does on a job, for equal pay for anything that man does on a job. Equal rights to join that rat race. Right? Join equal rights to stand in the middle of it and fight just like everybody else. I want to be as good as you in this battle that's meaningless. What a funny thing. Sometimes I think the woman movement should have been, hey, guys, come join us. We have the prize. You know? Not give us the right to join you in your insanity. Oh, I know I'm going to hear from many activists who are going to say, but that's not what it's about. I understand it's not about that. But Bertolt Brecht said, if you join the rat race, you're in the race of rats. Armand DeMille here with you with the positive mind. Listen, friends, listen. There's great hope up here. If we can do this, if WBAI and other Pacifica stations and the nation allows us to talk to men and say, men, hey, let's change our ideas a little bit. Maybe we could look at this a little different. Maybe the real gathering can start to happen. Some men give up and leave their manhood and self-respect behind completely. They become the casualties of the nonsensical mission. I mean, what do you call the lawyer who no longer cares about who they defend? You know, just for the buck. What do you call the lawyer who giggles? You know, the ones that we make the jokes about. The sharks. Or the physicians. with the 10 people in the 10 different rooms as you kind of go into the managed care room, and they got the racket beat because they could do some kind of a procedure that gets them more money from the insurance company. I remember one urologist who did that with practically everybody. He'd go into almost every man he saw. He said, "Oh, you got a wart there. I got to remove that wart. It won't cost you anything. Don't worry about it." Well, he got $1,500 to remove the wart, even if it wasn't there. So he made every urological visit a wart removal, because that's how he beat them. Armand D'Amelio with you at The Positive Mind. Lawyers who are no longer representing law or justice, doctors who no longer represent health and taking care of people, even your vitamin sellers, even your nutritionist who is looking at what he could push that he could get a little cheaper, the ones who step outside of their true manliness, their humanness, for the other goal of success, power, you see? Because that's the one we're taught to go for. Success. Power. When I get to the top, I don't care if I'm selling you starch and calling it glutathione. When I get to the top, I'll be able to do good for everybody. The most compelling statistic for the depth of this unacknowledged burnout is that men's health statistics kind of prove it out. Men lead women in 8 out of 10 top causes of death. Out of the top causes of death, men lead women in 8 out of the 10 of those, and one of those causes is suicide. One of the top 10 causes of death is suicide, and men do that much, much more than women. Men are 4 more times more likely to commit suicide than a woman. Men's suicide rates increase with age as men suffer more burnout and have less capacity for joy and spontaneity. So then this thing happens, you know. Men find that they can't get off the way they used to. They don't get as high from drugs. Oh, my God, grass just makes me sleepy. Oh, alcohol doesn't do it anymore. You know, women and, I'm married and I don't really care. I don't have all that sex drive. Aha, Viagra, good, give me back some joy and spontaneity. You know, but without it, without your joy and spontaneity, men, they've been living for this. They've been living on this. This has been their reward. This is what keeps things going for them, and they don't have it. Suicide. May as well take your walk on the ice. Men are 3 times as likely as women to have a drug or alcohol problem, which may explain the reason that men are more than twice as likely as women to have chronic liver disease. Addictions are a major sign of men struggling with the whole concept of manhood. The pain of burnout. Addictions are a major way men treat the most significant sign of burnout, which is the looming depression. What is the looming depression? The looming depression is, I see reality. It is not about this. I don't want to be doing this. I don't want to be running this way. I don't want to be living this way. This can't be what it's about. Well, men, of course, I understand what you're saying. So if you're a vibrant, strong man out there who's keeping his shoulders up, if you were the firstborn of any family, firstborn males of a family are given the role of carrying along their father's and mother's world. They tend to follow the rules. They tend to uphold the rules. Now you give me a firstborn who's also a perfectionist, and they become a preacher. And they are now preachers about what is good and what is right, and they know exactly how to live. And they're strong, and they're adamant, and they're weird. You know what I mean? I mean, you look at them, you think sometimes if you touched them with a pin, they'd blow up or something. They're strange. They live behind sheltered walls. They're afraid of the air coming in. They're afraid of water. They're afraid of things, you know. I'm not going to let you get me. I'm not going to let you get me. You live a totally isolated, powerful fortress of a world. Is that it? Is that what it's about? Is that the goal we're going for? Is that what manliness is? One common tenet that links to many branches of the men's movement is that men need each other in order to grow and need each other to grow in specific ways. This isolation, this idea of competition between men, having them compete and stay separate, the trouble is if they get together. And the trouble is not if they get together and they hang around and they say, did you see that shot over the left field fence? That's not the stuff. But if they start talking to each other and say, you know, I'm tired. I don't know what I'm doing it for. And somebody else says, you know, I'm tired too. I don't know what I'm doing it for. That's where the problem rises. The problem rises when people, suddenly men, stand up and they're allowed to talk to each other. We've got a society that forbids men to talk to each other. You are not allowed to talk about your weakness. You're not allowed to talk about your frailty. You're not allowed to talk about your sadness, your tears. You're just not allowed to. Well, maybe not anywhere. I mean, WBAI allows you to. Here in New York City, they do on Pacifica Radio. They do when you call in this radio program. And it's contagious. I tell you, for 3 weeks I've been talking about men, and I get more letters of appreciation from men saying, oh, thank God. Thank God. So I'm going to have to continue this series on men. I'm going to have to continue talking about men because I think, not because I think men are important. Men are half as important. You know, the other half is important too. But what's important is that these are the button pushers. These are the guys who seem to have the power. What if we could get them to relax? What if we could get them to look at themselves a little bit? What would it mean? Men need brothers, and they need close friends. They need fathers. They need mentors. They need elders. They need wise men counsel in order to grow. But they can't allow themselves to ask for it. When men start sharing their frustration instead of their elation, their failures instead of their success, that's when I'll relax. That's when I'll have the strong feeling of coming home. That's when I feel safest. I totally support broken manhood. I totally support broken manhood. If you're a guy and you feel broken, you got my support. I understand. Nobody else may understand. You don't understand. I understand. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. We're going to be taking your calls a little later today. We're talking about men, and we're talking about men who are cut off from other men, and we're talking about burnout. You know, we're cut off from relating to other men in meaningful ways. There's no room for shared feeling or true brotherhood in the modern male manual. There's no room for sharing what men need to share in order to mature. Brothers and elders are crucial in our hopes of becoming men. But we're cut off from our brothers and the family of men. We're cut off from the source of our own manhood. Cut off. The idea is you get married. And if you get married, now you're the head of the household. Now, this head is a very important thing, because as the head of the household, the body of the household is left behind. So the head has got to go out, you know? So now I want you to picture you're the head of the household, and so your head goes out to earn a job. And then finally gets, but you leave your body at home, you know what I mean? And then you come home and you meet your body and you say hello and you relax. But you're the head of the household. And the head of the household has got to work and strive, and so you look at your mate, whoever your mate is, and you say to your mate, I'm tired. And your mate says, oh, sure, honey, here, let me make you a drink. No, I'm really tired. Oh, you must be depressed. Let me send you to a shrink. It's getting to be a song. Let me make you a drink. Let me send you to a shrink. No, I'm really tired. Well, maybe what you need is a few winks. Right, we're going along. We're going to get this poem right out to the end. And no, I'm really tired. You know, life stinks. Because for many men, they are frustrated, they are worn, they are torn, and there's nothing they could do. You look at the family you built. You look at it. You say, I've got 3 kids. I've built this house. Now, what am I supposed to do? How do I keep it going? I cannot tell my daughter she can't go to private college. I can't tell my son he can't have his car. I can't. So I've got to keep it going. So the man gets mished up in this machine, you know, of producing these little patties. You know, you throw the man in and kind of gets all mushed up like a hamburger meat. And he comes out and he produces this little mold of a man. And this man is going to keep repeating and repeating and repeating, like the mold is going to repeat, and he's going to keep doing it until he has a heart attack and he dies, and life is over, and he's perpetuated it once more. The next guy comes along, or his son comes along and does the very same thing. We got to break this. We got to change it. We got to become more human. We have to look at what we're doing, you know? Now, I am not a failure who is trying to, who is spending his life trying to say to, you know, people, oh, there's a reason I'm a failure, you see, because life is tough. I'm not. I'm a success. I'm somebody who's done it for so many years, and I got to the top of the ladder. And I'm looking back on it, and I'm saying, okay, I've shown I could do it, but I still know it's wrong. I remember once I worked in Wall Street, and I was working in Wall Street for 10 years while I was going to school at night. I was studying psychology at night. I went to Hunter College at night, and I was taking evening courses, and I was going to, I was working in Wall Street during the day. I was an ex-musician working in Wall Street as a trader, buying and selling stocks, right? That was my job. I had an instinct. I knew how to do it. I did it well. So I'm doing this, and I'm doing it, and I'm making money, but I did not believe for a single moment that this job had any meaning. People said, what do? I said, I play Monopoly. I really felt like I went in, I played Monopoly, I happened to win more than I lost, and that was a good thing. So I kept winning at this game of Monopoly. Never did it feel like a career or a job. It felt like a job. It never felt like a career, a thing I dedicated myself to. What I did dedicate myself to was my studies about the human mind. And so when I was 29 years old, I went into my bosses and I said, okay, I'm retiring. 29. I'm quitting. And they said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to become a shrink. And they said, what are you going to do becoming a shrink? I said, I'm going to go make from making $100 an hour, which back then was a lot of money. I'm going to now make $15 an hour. And they said, well, why are you doing that? I said, because it at least has some kind of meaning, because this has no meaning. And they thought it was crazy. But they wanted to buy into it. And they said, well, maybe we should buy into your business. You're such a smart guy. Armand DeMille, 212-209-2900 is the number here. 212-209-2900. Before I go one step further, we'll be taking your calls about this idea of maleness, the concept of maleness, and how you interact with it. Please, no judgments. Please don't go beat up on people who already don't need to be beat up on further. So let's see if we can unearth some of your compassion. I know you've been the victim of it. Every man has been the victim of this concept of maleness, so has every woman. So we'll take your calls in just a minute, 212-209-2900. The other thing I want to say to you before I go further is I want to thank you so much. Last week's fund drive, we had a fund drive. Where we were just raising money for the station because it was the middle of the summer. They call it a mini drive, but, you know, men don't like the word mini. It was a maxi drive. They had a drive. We had a drive, and anyway, we raised money. It was really remarkable. I want to thank you. I want to thank especially certain ones of you out there who were extraordinarily generous in giving money to the station in my name and my honor. I honor you. I mean, it was just, it really touched me. Throughout the 3 days that I was on, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, they got a tremendous response. And we weren't offering anything. We were just saying, you know, show your support for the station. So for all of those of you, for those of you who did contribute during that time, my very, very special gratitude. Very special gratitude. It has been noticed. 212-209-2900. I will take a call right now, Michael. I thank you for standing by, my friends. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. My name is Lucy, and I'm from Brazil. I'm sorry about my accent.
Uh-huh, that's okay.
Yeah. You were talking about man. I'm calling about my brother. And we are three at home, and he's the firstborn, and he was always treated like the king, and he had everything, and my family, my father's family, was very wealthy, and they gave him everything, and me and my sister, we didn't have too much. In fact, sometimes we had to bring things for him, like breakfast in the bed, or this kind of thing. And he never worked. his whole life. He's 42 now. But he has money because he always had everything, and he had some land, and he has money from this. But he got to be a little bit angry with all of us in a way, and with my mother too, because my father died when we were, he was 2 years old, I was a month. And now my mother wanted to study, and she did two universities. She got to be a lawyer, pedagogist. She really got into studying a lot. And in a way, we thought that she forgot us a little bit, and we were with our grandparents all the time.
Well, Luisa,
and now,
mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Your brother, is he a happy man?
No, I don't think so.
So
because he got, yeah?
So now when you think about it, he had all the money, he had you serve him, he was given everything, and he's an unhappy man. How does that
yes,
make you feel?
I feel sad for him because, you know, he's a lawyer, you know? He got to be a lawyer because everybody, you have to be and you're very intelligent. And he loves to cook, and he couldn't do this because he was a man. Mm-hmm. And, man doesn't go to the kitchen. You have to be served. You don't have to serve. And he got very, I know that he got very sad because he couldn't cook. You know, in my thing, I think he would be a cook, a chef, or a researcher, or something like that, that they didn't let him do it.
Huh.
And he's a lawyer, but he doesn't work on it.
How sad.
Yeah, and he never needed the money. This is the sad part.
So what do you do? How often do you see him?
Well, now I am here for like 9 years, and I stayed here for 5 years straight, and I went 2 years ago, and last year I saw him. But he's always quiet, he talks, but I feel that he's very angry with everything, and he's very angry with my mother. And for like 5 years ago, my grandmother had a problem, like stroke, and my mother had to stay with her, and she died a year ago. And but my mother had a lot of emotional problems, and she got a little bit sick too. And he said that he decided to, I'm gonna be the boss of the family now,
sure.
And I'm gonna tell you what to do now. You're gonna eat this, you're gonna do this, this. And she got she's a little bit, afraid of him. In fact, everybody is a little, because he gets to be very, aggressive sometimes.
Well, Luisa, you know, in many ways, you've told us a very important story. You told us about somebody who was given the role of being the surrogate father. He became the father real early. He got all the privileges, and that's it. So you're angry all the time. And how would you like this as a definition? When you get older and you grow up, how would you like to be a person that everybody's afraid of? You know, there are many men I know who would say, good, I'd like to be somebody who everybody's afraid of, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, gee, I wouldn't like to be, and you wouldn't like to be, huh? It would be terrible to have everybody afraid of you. What
yeah,
a sad thing.
Yeah, and he always had a lot of friends. Now he doesn't trust anybody.
I understand. Thank
always
you.
Alone.
Thank you so much for calling in, Luisa. Thank you.
Okay, thank you
maybe
very much.
Maybe one day you'll be able to tell him what you feel, you know, and maybe
yeah,
ask him if
so.
He'll cook with you one day.
Okay, I hope so.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So there it is. This is Armand DeMille with you. It is exactly, by the way, just in case you're curious, 1:30 here at WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Sad, you know, especially that older son role is sad because you become the father of the family and you got to follow all the rules. And it's, you know, I think the blues were written for guys, mainly. I kind of think that jazz is a male hang your head down and feel what it's really like kind of thing, you know? go to a jazz club, you know, when I used to kid, I used to go to the jazz clubs. Mostly guys hanging around. There were some women, of course. But they were kind of hanging around in sympathy, you know. It was almost like they would talk to each other. And I'd listen to the instruments talking to each other, and especially in the blues, you'd hear an acknowledgement, you know. Listen to this piece. You'll hear Herb Ellis on guitar talking to Ray Brown, the bassist, telling his story. And you'll hear Ray Brown, the bassist, talking back. And you'll hear the piano player in the background saying, yeah, yeah, I understand. Tune in. It's a male conversation. Like a conversation. You know what I loved about jazz when I was an active player? What I loved about it was being able to be a part of that kind of a family, you know? You get five or six people up on a stage and you make music. And you're talking to each other in a way that you just can't talk another way. And when you finally get into one specific groove or riff or something and you're kind of moving in music, you get this feeling that you're connected. Well, that's it, you know, this feeling of being connected. Men, women, we all need it. We all need to belong to something. Feeling disconnected, whew, it's brutal. It's absolutely brutal. Do you ever love anybody so deeply, and then you have a little bit of a tiff, and you feel the break with that person, and it feels like your heart's been ripped out of your chest? Do you ever have that happen? Where, you know, you say, how could I be getting hurt like this? How could he hurt me this way? How could she hurt me? How could I be separate from them? I love them so much, you know. I believe that all men have a deep yearning and need for the feeling of brotherhood in order to deal with the seriousness of this life. The need is so strong because it runs deeper than any of us realizes. It goes deeper than our recent experiences or even our lifetime experiences. It's as if we are experiencing something of what men have experienced since family bonds first started, since fathers had sons and brothers wrestled with brothers. Many men speak of a genetic feel to it because it runs so deep. This yearning for brotherhood is one example of the deep feelings that men have when they first come out of a goal-oriented numbness. And that's what it's about, friends. I mean, when you go and you pass that bar and you see those guys hanging out with their heads dipped in alcohol, you know, think of the brotherhood. Think of, oh, that's the only way they could get that brotherhood. It's the only way. Nowadays, we do it a little different. I kind of like this when you go to the gymnasium and you sweat together. You know, it's a little advanced. The society's getting a little better. Right? You go to a gymnasium now you're all working out. As long as you're wearing the right outfit. You know? As long as you got the right shoes and as long as you're looking good. But you're all in that gym together and you share that thing of achievement. But unfortunately, there is this kind of comparison thing that goes on. How muscular are you? How strong are you? Et cetera, et cetera. Where do men ever hang out together? What do they get? Well, they go to a football game or a baseball game and they hang out together. Now, it's not just men. Women want to be part of this brotherhood, too. We humans are all part of this brotherhood. But it is the men who are aching the most. Because they are not allowed the tenderness of feelings that I believe women are allowed. So they're there cracking at the seams. You know? And I see so many of them. You don't know, can't imagine what it's like. I'm a big guy. I'm 6'4". A man comes over to me and he's like been cracking at the seams, trying to hold it together. And then right before he leaves, I hug him. Not always. But I hug him and he's never been hugged in his life. He hasn't felt this in years. And that feeling of feeling a man say, oh, God, do I need this connection? 212-209-2900, maybe you don't feel it. You know, maybe you're not one of those guys. You know, we have this, I think that's what homophobia is. It's the idea of the society's way of keeping men from being close to each other. Better watch out. You may get turned on. 212-209-2900, this is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, I'm on.
Yes.
Hello, hi, my name is Keith, I'm calling from Brooklyn.
Hello, Keith.
You couldn't have picked a more profounder topic. I tell you why. You know, I've been going through something myself lately. I've been feeling like I've been shortchanged. I don't know, I've been looking for someone to blame. I think it's like the ruling class and we're all serfs, you know, like in feudalism.
Sure.
And, you know, you try to aspire, you know, you have your responsibilities, you get a certain age, you have the children, you have the mortgage, you have the wife. And you get to your job one day and you ask yourself, why am I working? What am I working so hard for? I mean, you know, you work, and you don't really get a chance to enjoy life. You want to take trips, but, you know, you're living from paycheck to paycheck. And it really tears at the seams. It really plays on your psyche if you let it. But I mean, how do you not? I mean, you know, if you could probably hear it in my voice, the confusion. But how do you get around it? I mean, you can look for brotherhood, you can look for companionship, but I mean, the way the life
well,
is
let me
structured
ask you this.
Is
Keith. Let me ask you something. You say you could look for brotherhood. Do you have any brotherhood? Do you ever go and instead of complaining about the world, imagine if you did just what you did with me. You said, geez, Armand, I see this sham I'm leading. I see this world that I'm leading. Okay, I'm out there. I'm plugging along. It breaks my seams. It hurts my back. You know, my lower spine is beginning to crack. I can't seem to even keep the pressure on my legs anymore. Things are so tough on me. And you could say it to someone. Do you have anybody you could say that to who will not tell you what to do? Do you have anybody?
Hello?
I can't hear you. Go ahead.
Yes, I came across some people that I've in my circle that I've talked to, and they tend to seem to fit. They feel the same way. You know, primarily that, you know, they've been shortchanged. You know, they you know, they've been inspired. You know, their parents didn't have much, so. Here we go with blaming the parents, I guess, but
right,
the parents
that's
didn't
the
have
point.
Much.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, he's like, we all wanted to be born into a world where, like, a Rockefeller or, you know, the DuPont, I don't know. But we work. This is the lot we've been defined in life. We work. And then one day you scratch your head and you say, what is it all for? I mean, I can't do what my neighbor does. I mean, you know, I've been in this house maybe 11 years. I haven't done anything to it where people just move in. They fix up the yard. They fix the roof. They put this or that. And it looks nice. You know, God bless them. But now you ask yourself, why am I working? Why am I working so hard? What is the payoff? To get the retirement and I got one foot in the grave before I can enjoy my pension, so I can enjoy my pension? Just the very concept of pension. You know, you take your index and your thumb thing and you pinch yourself. That's a pension.
Right. Right.
You know, you can barely make it on full pay, but now they promise you this elusive life, this life of serenity when you're getting your golden years, and you get one foot in the grave. I mean, I don't want to sound pessimistic, but I mean, that's how I see it right now.
And Keith, I fully agree with you. But now look, let's look at all the elements. It's very hard to not blame somebody. It's very hard not to blame our parents. It's very hard not to blame society and culture. It's very hard to not blame the guy next door who's fixing up his house. It's very hard to get away with this without blaming. The other side of it, if I were you, Keith, I'd say, Armand, wow, this has been tough. I'm looking forward to when I could relax, but you know, I'm still comparing myself to the other guy. And Armand says to you, sure, I understand. And that's all you need. What you need is the brotherhood of people saying, yes, I acknowledge. Not here's what you do about it, not here's what you got to do, I acknowledge. You can't imagine. I mean, Keith, can you imagine how many people feel the way you do? Do you imagine how many brothers you have right now listening to this show who probably would put their arms around you in a minute and say, phew, let's just look at a fire together. Let's not do anything. Let's build a big fire. Let's sit in a circle. Let's just look at it. And let's just be shoulder to shoulder with nothing to do. We won't build a house. We won't construct anything. We'll just say, phew, we've been through it together. You know, now just the knowledge that you're not alone makes all the difference in the world. That's what I'm proposing. What I'm proposing is you find brothers. You find people who you could share it with who are not going to wind up just complaining. Because complaining makes it even more difficult. It means that something's oppressing you, you know? You bought the
bad
one. Go ahead, Keith.
I want to say this quick. I want to say this quick because I know you're pressed for time, and I want to let the next caller on. One, I have this thing with the inequalities of society. That's one thing. I guess that maybe it's fair or not fair that I'm focusing on. The inequalities. If the cake was laid out and everybody had an equal portion, then everybody would have an equal shot. That's one aspect. Secondly, the other thing I was thinking of is, well, okay, I don't want to sound like I'm blaming society, but again, I if things were, you know, equally, just proportionally dispersed as far as fair housing, fair education, you know, you're not one half of the block or one half of society has a better education, which puts them in a better condition to get a better life, if you understand what I'm saying.
I understand what you're saying, because I was born on the other side myself. You know, I was one of those who didn't get as many jelly beans as everybody else. I know exactly.
Jelly beans.
I know exactly what it's like. I know that other side of it. But let me tell you something now. We just heard from a young woman a minute ago who said, and my brother has finally succeeded. He's grown up, and he is feared by everybody and loved by nobody, and he's rich. Now, what do you want to be? You know, and now I know you're sitting there and you're saying to yourself, you know, I think I'll settle for being rich and feared by everybody. I think Keith could use about a year of that.
Yeah. Then I'll be looking for people to embrace right after that.
Then I'll hug anybody.
Somebody hug me. Oh, and another thing, my other point was time. Time is of the essence. It seems like I'm at this age where I really want to accomplish so much. I want to lay the foundation for my sons. I know they have their mind of their own, but I just want to lay the foundation for them. And, you know, when God takes me and I go on to wherever I go, they'll have a better life than I. I guess that's every parent's wish, that to provide a life for their offspring better than the their lives. I guess that happens to every generation.
Yeah, but you know what the greatest gift you can give your kids is? Greatest
time.
Gift is to not hate yourself. Is to give them a father who liked himself. You give that to your kids, you've given them a very big gift.
I appreciate that.
Sure.
Hey, Alma, thanks for your time.
My pleasure, Keith. Thank you.
Okay.
So today, you know, we have no rights that truly give us a sense of manhood. We are deprived of an authentic manhood training manual. We have these little rituals that have some archetypal flavor to them, you know, like getting a driver's license. Ah, I got a driver's license now, I'm a man. Being able to drink. Ah, now you go in a bar and order a drink. That makes me a man, right? Graduating from high school. Ah, now I'm graduating from high school. I got a car. I'm a man. Some sense of accomplishment. And then, you know, graduation gives us some new social rights in the job market. Marriage is another achievement. The closest is probably boot camp in the military. Yet we'll see how that right, as well as the others, leaves us much more to be desired as a right of manhood. How about cigarette smoking in manhood? 1995 Times article about the marketing of cigarettes, especially the young man, quotes a marketing guru, Alan Brody, talks of the cowboy as the modern warrior and the Marlboro man as the ultimate man. He goes on to say, we as a society have abandoned tribal initiation rites and cigarettes are a substitute. Kids want to prove themselves and play the role of adults. When you rob people of something they want, marketers will find a way to give it to them. How about sports and manhood? For many boys, making the team and winning a letter in high school is a kind of first rite of initiation. These are all the rites of initiation that we're given as substitutes because we don't know what to do with our males. We don't know what to do with our men, you know? Well, I'm telling you, friends, I'm sticking with you. We are going to make this work, and we're going to make it work. I'm going to women as well. But I want us to pay attention, and I'm appreciating all of the contributions I'm getting from you, the callers. 212-209-2900. Let's hear how this touches you. I'm going to take another call right now. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Whoops.
You hear me?
Yes, I hear you now.
Hello?
I'm sorry, that was my mistake.
Oh,
hello.
Hi, hello there. How are you, Armand?
Good.
Oh, good. I'm calling because I just discovered a tremendous revelation about myself that I'm ashamed of. You know, I always relish in being around guys who are hugging. Just as you said now, it is so amazing. And I always go, wow, yeah, that's it. And in my classroom, you know, I let the little boys, they play together, they hug each other, they kiss each other, and I always say, wow, that's healthy. And one of the women made a comment and said, you know, American men are too soft. They're all this emotion, and they're always talking about feelings. You know, I want a real man. And I was shocked by what she said. And then I was very upset. And when I was driving in my car, I said, oh, my God, wait a minute. Why am I so upset? And what I realized was that, wow, after I thought I had done so much understanding of myself or work or growth, that I'm uncomfortable with men who show too much emotion. And I said, wait a minute, where is this coming from? And I was very upset about that because I thought that that was good. Men should show emotions. It must be healthy. It must be wonderful, blah, blah, blah. And I said, if I'm this conflicted, guys must be just as conflicted. Guys must not know which side is up or down. And, you know, and I've always seen the pain in a lot of the men that are my friends and in a lot of the men that I've loved, especially my dad, my father, and my ex-husband, where they just, you know, their emotions were not appropriate, were not acceptable, et cetera, et cetera.
Tell me about your dad's emotions.
Wow. He would go into extremes. Either he'd get real angry or he'd be very loving and tender. You know, or he'd be totally unavailable. You know, all extremes.
Yeah, yeah. So how would he feel? So what about the other general feelings? You see, the reason that I think women are antagonistic towards men, sometimes antagonistic towards men who seem to be crybabies, is because that's all they do. You know, sometimes the emotions that men show are just they're showing their complaints. They're complaining about everything. That's one. That's not really showing feeling as far as I'm concerned. Showing feeling to me is a man who's admitting his limitations, who's saying that he feels inadequate, that he says he feels that he can't do it, but he's not laying it on somebody else. The women who say, I want a real man, are women who wind up mothering boys. They wind up finding men who are little boys, and I'm sure that you've had that in your life. Guys who turn to you like a mommy.
Yeah.
Have you become a mommy to boys?
I hate it. No. I know I've done it, but then I hated myself for it because, you know, I thought, what good did that do? You know, they didn't need a mother. They needed a friend, or they needed an equal, or they needed, you know, I thought of other words. I didn't think that the mommy was appropriate.
Well, what did you need?
Oh, I wanted a friend. And, but what I realize is that the qualities that I admire in men tend to have to do with taking over a situation and being able to handle it well, being able to make things, build things, you know, create things. And those seem to me in the area, seem to be in the area of power, the area of being in charge.
Sure.
And those are the things I really admire, to the point where I broke off going out with a man because you're not gonna believe this. He couldn't pack things and he couldn't tie up things, and it drove me crazy because I was moving and everything he did fell apart. And I said, "Oh, this guy's useless." And then afterwards,
see,
I felt terrible.
That's not because he couldn't pack a suitcase. It's the fact that he couldn't pack a suitcase was kind of representative of the other things that you saw that you were having trouble dealing with. Because a man who could say to you, "I don't know how to pack a suitcase. Let's go hire somebody to pack your suitcases. Let's go get your brother up here to pack your suitcases." That kind of guy you'd appreciate.
Oh, wow. I didn't think of that. Yeah.
So it's really not just the suitcase that makes you suddenly turn on the men that you've been with. So has there ever been a man who's held your interest for a long period of time? You were married, weren't you?
Yeah. The qualities I liked in him were, again, that, where he, whenever he was in charge and whenever he loved doing what he was doing and whenever he worked on the art that he loved so much. And I found that wonderful and exciting. And whenever he was very close to his friends, and he'd invite them over, and, you know, he'd sit for hours, and I'd sit with them, and we'd have these great conversations. And, you know, those were the times I was happiest, and those were the times I loved him most.
So would you say, or do you think we could honestly say, that that nowadays you're lonely?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You miss that strength. You miss that thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I hear. I hear. When did your dad die?
10 years ago.
You miss him, don't you?
Yeah, it's hard to say. It's like every day. You know, it's weird.
Tell me what's weird.
Well, you know, he'd always say, well, he spoke in Spanish, and he would always say, "Yeah." You know, when I called him, and he'd be all excited, and he'd tell me, we'd always talk about science, and we'd always talk about politics, and, you know, he'd tell me what he was building around the house, and those seemed to be great conversations that I miss, and I miss hearing the excitement in his voice when he, you know, heard that I had called, and that I was caring about him.
Yeah.
It was good. It was actually wonderful.
And you miss him a lot now.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost like, you know, when you're so dependent on that kind of energy, you sometimes wonder where that energy is ever going to come from. You keep looking at it from the outside. You keep thinking, okay, now the man's going to bring this to me. You know, my dad brought it to me. Eha, huh? Is that what he called you? Eha?
Oh, yeah.
Eha.
Yeah, but it was just the inflection, Armand. You know, that voice. And it says a lot. It's just one word, but it would say, like, "Wow, you've called me. This is great. Now we can talk." And we would. We'd stay on for hours. And the other side of the coin is my brother hated him and couldn't even spend 10 minutes alone with him. And I don't think he really hated him. I think he resented that my father was never close to him. So that I think actually my brother is wounded. I think my brother is hurt rather than, you know, that really is greater than the hate. And I feel sad about that. You know, and I wrote him a letter recently, but I never mailed it to my brother, telling him all the amazing gifts my father had and passed on to us. But I said, I can't mail this. He's going to rip it up and never talk to me again. So
yeah,
I never
you'll
mailed
have to relate
letter.
To your brother just as he is, you know?
Oh, yes, exactly.
I thank you
I can't
for calling
change him, Armand.
Well, no.
Thank you.
But you're a growing person. Thank you for calling. I'm very glad
thank
you did.
Thank you, Armand. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
You know, the human stories are kind of amazing, aren't they, friends? Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind, Tuesday through Thursday. You know, if you wanted a copy of today's program, you would certainly call 1-800-848-9222. 1-800-575-0580. Later this week, we're going to be talking more about men. I want to talk about, I think I'm leading this towards Thursday, we're going to be talking about men and their perception of pain and men's relationship to pain. That should be a very interesting discussion. Hey, be sure to stay tuned for Mark Laiosa, who's up coming up next. One of the better people down there at WBAI, who's got some wonderful programming for you. This is Armand DeMille with The Positive Mind. Be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. If you want to send me an email, and we're collecting your letters, I'll be reading them on air. It's Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at BrainLink, B-R-E-I-N-L-I-N-K.com. Bye-bye for now.